Oh, hello, I didn't see you there. This is Dr. Thaddeus Venture, and you're listening to the Long Box Guys. Whatever that means.
Around the road, we're going home to the place where wild nerds roam with pretty girls and dudes and kids. Going to cons is our escape. It's like a pack of buddies in a star-filled sky where you can meet all your heroes and none of them fly.
Hey, Dad, what are the Long Box Guys going to do tonight, Brain?
The same thing the Long Box Guys do every night, Pinky. Drink and talk about comics. They're useless at taking over the world. Yes!
Hey, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the Long Box Guys. With me, as always, are some of my very best friends since I was a very little kid. Tommy. Sweet, sweet Tommy. How you doing, and what are you drinking?
I'm doing better than yesterday, and I'm drinking some Cardew. How are you doing, Tommy?
I'm doing great. Sorry about that headache you had yesterday there, buddy.
Yeah, it was a bad time.
I'm doing pretty well. I'm drinking what I call a Magilla Guerrilla Warfare, which is a rum and coke, or a Cuba Libre, served in a coconut shell with a little bit of banana schnapp as a float, and it is better than it sounds.
It would served almost coconut, have to be.
Yeah, served in a coconut shell with just a hint of glue still in it, because I just made the damn thing. Josh, our beer expert, now the owner of BeerTube, what are you drinking tonight?
I have a local pale ale called Greenbush from Widowmaker Brewing in Braintree, Massachusetts.
Great, and Greenbush is my Swamp Thing cover band. Hmm. All female Swamp Thing cover band.
It's oddly specific.
Yeah.
Damn right it is. Mikey, how you doing and what are you drinking?
I'm doing excellent, and because I'm back at Embassy Suites, I'm drinking a Dead Partner.
Ooh, tell our guests what's in a Dead Partner. We got to put that recipe up.
Nope.
Go back
and listen to the episodes.
Yeah, go find it.
Yeah.
It's an inside joke, people. Find it.
I'll put the recipe up.
Yeah. I mean, you probably will.
I probably will.
I can't stop you.
You can try. So this week we're going to talk about we've talked about this before, but we're so spoiled. There's so many great things on TV, so many good movies out there. Some of these we're actually starting to fall behind a little bit. And this week we're going to talk about The Umbrella Academy, one of my favorite ones, superhero genre ones to come out this year, except for the last goddamn 20 seconds. You lost me, guys. You lost me in the last 20 seconds.
So should we say spoilers ahead?
Yeah.
Spoilers ahead, people.
Yeah. Go put up the giant spoiler banner. If you've not watched Umbrella Academy until the very last moment, we are going to ruin that shit like a motherfucker. If you haven't seen Umbrella Academy yet, go back and try to find the episode where Mike tells you what a dead partner is. And it's not literally a dead partner except when it is, but mostly it's a drink. So go fucking find it.
Wow, we're really hostile tonight.
Are we mad at our...
Gin makes me angry. Oh, I gave you a hint.
Uh-oh.
All we need now is the cup and the mix.
Yeah, all right. Keep going.
Yeah. So let's go over a few of the characters, and let's go over the backstory. Now, LT... You turned me on to the Umbrella Academy way back in the day, so why don't you give me a little bit about the background?
Yeah.
Plus, there's a music relationship in there, and you're always my go-to for music.
Yeah, plus you never do backgrounds.
Yeah, you lazy sack of shit.
Fuck it all the time.
Okay, Umbrella Academy created by... Written
God,
by...
I hate you.
You son of a bitch!
That was almost like a big beer spray all over my monitor.
I'm sorry, Tommy. Go on.
Umbrella Academy, written by Gerard Way of My Chemical Romance. And it is art by Gabriel Ba, a Brazilian artist. It's a story of a group of children all born on the same day to parents that were not... to women that were not pregnant before that day. They were all adopted by a very rich man who adopted all these children, as many as he could, seven in total, and raised them for what he knew was going to be the end of the world. And he trained them all from a young age. One child he set aside and said she was totally ordinary in every sort of way and kept her out of all the Umbrella Academy reindeer games, if you will. And she was kept aside, not part of the team. The other six were sent on missions. They were stopping crimes from happening. They were saving the world on a daily basis. They had their own comic book. They had their own code names. They were all had their own special abilities. And they all sort of grew up and went their own separate ways. And number seven always felt left out. And it's the story of all of the Umbrella Academy children getting together for their father's funeral, getting back together one last time after a rift has occurred that kind of separated them all out.
And well, the rift was just like a really shitty childhood. That was the basic rift.
It's true. Their daddy did not show them a lot of love.
He didn't name them. He just called them by numbers. So it was a Dark Horse comic, and there's actually three different series that they have. They're both six issues each. The TV show, though, is much better than the comic book. Not that the comic book's bad. It's just doesn't – it pales in comparison to how good the TV show is.
It's just not great.
I think the TV show is so much better because they have more opportunity to go into the character and flesh them out more. Whereas the comic books, since they are so limited, I don't think they've had time to really delve into the characters the way that the TV show has had the time to really flesh out each character a bit more. And I think that's why the TV show is just so much better. Also, the addition of all the music in the TV show has just really enhanced everything.
Well, you're totally wrong. They've had plenty of time to develop more comic books than they had the TV show. They chose not to. And the TV show's better.
They did write two other comic books.
Yeah, we said that while you were away.
Oh, sorry.
You son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Inattentive bastard.
Flamingos.
Well, did we mention all of the very cool characters in there? Now, we went over the benefactor, the monocle, Sir Reginald Hargreaves, but we haven't really talked much about him. Does anyone want to tackle the monocle?
Nope. He's a douchebag.
All right, fine.
He was a douchebag.
Little fun fact about him, though. For some reason, in the TV show, they made him an alien.
How do you know he's an alien in the TV show?
Because he was on another planet with rockets taking off.
That was in the past. That was like a weird steampunky future.
Was it? No, because this is the way they've set up the TV show. It's the same universe as us, except Kennedy survives. And because he does, technology doesn't really advance too far. Everybody still has LPs, and nobody has a cell phone.
I thought in the third series of the comics you'd find out he's an alien anyway.
Oh, yeah. I haven't read the third series. Thanks for fucking spoiling it for me.
I told you there were going to be spoilers.
I don't listen to our podcast. How would I know there were spoilers?
Jesus. Yeah, so you find out he's an alien anyway.
Yeah.
All right. I actually, you know, that one scene
early in the show than they do in the comics.
Yeah.
All right. That one scene, I didn't really think it was alien so much as they were just being creatively steampunky, spacey way. But okay, alien. That's great. How about number one, Space Boy, Luther Hargreaves? Anyone want to take him?
He's awesome really in the comic book. Go ahead, Josh.
As far as the comic, I kind of like skipped around on the comics because this breach is one of my least favorite things. They handle it in my least favorite way in the comics, and I think they handle it a little better in the show, and that's time travel. So yeah, spoiler alert, time travel. Time travel's everywhere in this series. It's all over the place, and it's frustrating. But my big thing was, honestly, I kept staring at the actor who played Luther, and I refused to look up where I knew him from. And I was like, where do I know that guy from? I know him somewhere. Where do I know him from? And it probably took me like 8 of the 10 episodes to finally be like, I got it. And he is a very minor character on Game of Thrones. It took me forever to sort it out. Like, my brain was, like, jabbing me in the eyes. Like, why can't I figure out who this guy is? But anyway, he lives on the moon. His initial superpowers is that he was super strong. He was like your typical kind of superhero, you know, invulnerable, super strength. But he gets sent on a mission where he is tragically and direly injured. And in order to save him, they have to mix his DNA with the family butler, who is a chimpanzee, in order to save him. And so by mixing his DNA with the super smart chimpanzee, he actually gets stronger, but is physically altered to the point where he's a little embarrassed. And his father sends him, Hargrave sends him to the moon, but not for the reason he thinks.
Yeah. He's almost as hairy as your dad, Josh.
Almost. Like, yeah.
Like, yeah, he's like right there.
He's like right there. I mean, they're both right there together. Yeah.
In the comic book, his head is sewn on to the body of a Martian gorilla. And I think that's awesome.
Of course you do. You have a thing about monkeys.
That is certainly apes. One of the differentiators. Yeah, where they don't do that in the – where they make it a little more personal in the TV show than in the comic.
In the TV show, it's a serum.
Yeah.
It's a serum.
I just – that's the only thing about the comics that I liked better, so I wanted to just mention it.
That's right.
All right, the Kraken, Diego Hargreaves. He has a pretty cool power. I like him. He can kind of control metal if he throws it. That's kind of a weird power, right?
That's not Diego.
Yeah. Diego's number two, the Kraken.
Yes, but he's not the Kraken.
He's just called Diego.
It's called Diego. Kraken's the guy with the tentacles who's the ghost. No. He's dead.
No, that's the horror. That's Ben.
Yeah. Kraken is number two.
Number two.
Kraken is number – that's why I was moving on to number two, the Kraken, Diego.
Tom's right.
Okay. Tom is right.
That's odd.
Sorry, I'm not drinking enough to be wrong yet.
I got to drink that away.
Yeah.
Everyone drink – Tom's right. That should be like three drinks. So Diego Hargreaves kind of has – he has super agility, a little faster than normal people, I think. That might just be a physical development kind of thing. My dog dropped the ball under my bicycle. Hold on a second. Josh, take it from there.
What? No, I thought –
he doesn't even know who he is.
I don't even know what the fuck we're talking about.
So
why would you name the
Diego,
guy who has the tentacles the Kraken?
Diego has the ability to control the curve on his throwing knives.
Yeah, he's like Bullet Time from Wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except with knives.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got, like, high dexterity and whatnot. But I thought he was Kraken because of the tentacles. The other kid was Kraken. Why do they call him Kraken?
I don't know. They were kids when they came up with their code names, right?
Yeah. That just seems like the guy with the tentacles should be the fucking Kraken.
It's true, but it's not that way.
Horror's pretty good for the horror.
Yeah. It's not as good as the Kraken.
Allison Hargreaves, the rumor. That's a cool power. She can, like, say something and you have to do it.
Yeah, it's a little too what's her name for me. There's actually a song, Rumor Has It. She's a musician. What are we talking about?
Rumor Has It?
Yes.
Right? Because of Sheena E?
That's not fucking Sheena E.
Hey, don't look it up, you lazy bastard. Let it bother us for a while.
Fine. It's she is a British woman with brown hair. She's a little heavyset. She's got a beautiful voice, and I like her.
Yeah, but Sheena E.
It's not Sheena E.
It's not Nash, is it?
No. How do you not know this, LT? You're disappointing me.
LT, you son of a bitch.
She was like the most popular female vocalist for like 10 years.
Oh.
For fuck's sake.
Oh, it's not Sheena.
I will rape murder you if you say Sheena one more time.
You don't mean Adele, do you?
You horny suicide.
You are about to get Alan Moore'd, Mike.
You're not talking about Adele, are you?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, the Sheena E of England.
Jesus.
That's not. That's
a thing.
That's
not a thing.
That is definitely a thing.
Yeah. All right. How about the guy that everyone says stole the show, the seance, Klaus Hargreaves? He was easily the most fun character to watch.
Oh, yeah.
He was probably the best character.
Oh, he was the most fun to watch on screen. I mean, he ate up the scenery. He acted the shit out of that. He seemed to be having fun the entire time. And I thought his acting was really solid. I mean, he drew me in.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like the guy who played Luther.
I like that guy, too. Except,
the guy who played Luther did a good job. Don't get me wrong. All the acting was pretty solid.
Did you ever see him in Misfits?
Who?
Klaus. I don't know his real name. He played...
No, I never really watched Misfits.
No, Misfits was good, especially the first couple seasons.
Yeah. Yeah, I should watch that. That's a British superhero show.
Yeah, it's like the Misfits of science without all the science.
Oh, I do remember that. Yeah. I didn't even put that together, honestly.
All right, number six, not the the Kraken, but the horror, Ben Hargreaves, who dies really quickly.
Yeah, when they're kids. Yeah.
Did you guys notice that they've actually Hargreaves numbered them in reverse order? The most powerful you think is Space Boy because he's number one, but he's actually the least powerful of all of them. Fun Alex fact for you. Number seven is the most powerful.
Really? I would think like number four is way up there.
Number four is, I think he's in the middle of the pack when you compare him to the horror and Klaus. But especially in the comic books, Klaus has the ability to control the dead. Also,
well, that's why I said number four, Klaus, the seance.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We were talking about the same guy here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's more powerful than, you know, once he gets that power to control the dead, I mean, that's pretty fucking powerful.
Yeah, but he can't control time and space like number five can. And he doesn't really control, like the horrors.
Wait, so who's
the horror? The horror guy's pretty quick. How good was he?
That's Ben. That's number six. Right.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah,
so
Ben.
Controlling time and space is less powerful than having some tentacles come out of your body.
You don't know how powerful this dude is. We see it at the very end of this show how powerful the horror was.
It's true. Yeah,
he takes out all those special forces guys
in one shot. Yeah.
Yeah.
From beyond the grave, even.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's just my theory. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but I don't know.
I thought number two was pretty powerful because, I mean, in the comic book,
she can alter reality from what she says, but in the TV show, they've altered it so that she's only able to alter people's minds.
Yeah, but traveling through time and space seems a little more powerful than just physically killing a bunch of people in a room.
Yeah, because I can go back in time and space and kill your grandfathers.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have mattered. Because all those kids were born to women who weren't even pregnant. That has nothing to do with it at all.
I'm not trying to kill my brothers and sisters. I'm talking about you, Mike Manning.
Yeah, I was one of those 43.
47.
Who are you?
That's a common rumor that I started. Yeah. So that way you would try to...
Rumor had it?
Yeah.
Started?
Yeah. Okay,
Adele. So this was I'm not a binge watcher. You guys know that. I tend to like pick a day and start watching a show, and I'll go back the next Monday and watch the next episode. I'm stuck in my habits. Like you ruminate, you let it sink in, and then you watch the next episode. Umbrella Academy, though, I kind of binge watched. I'd watch like three episodes at a time. They were that good. And did you guys binge watch this, or did you guys watch one? Or
I crushed it in like 3 days.
2 days.
2 days?
Man, my wife watched it probably in 3 days.
3 days? It took me about 2 weeks, so that's super fast for me. So 3 days, that's really good. I think the only thing we ever binge watched right in a row was Glow, me and Josh.
Yeah, we killed that on Saturday.
That's the only thing I've ever powered through. And that was awesome.
Mark Maron.
I think I'll be done with Robots, Love, Death, and Robots. But those
also
are very
good.
Short.
Yeah, that was great. Those I love the farmer short. One.
Oh, me too. We were just talking about that. But let's not talk about that. We got to go back.
Anyway.
Anyway, so the basic storyline. Mikey, why don't you give us the basic storyline here?
Yeah, well, LT already pretty much set up the whole storyline. All the kids are brought back together. And then number five comes back. He had disappeared in time and brings tidings of the impending apocalypse. But he doesn't really bother to tell anybody because he thinks all of his siblings are idiots.
He's kind of right, but he's also kind of a shitbag.
Oh, yeah, he's definitely a shitbag. But when you live by yourself for 20-something years and have to marry a mannequin, you've got a lot of fucking problems.
Yeah, all right, I'm not saying he doesn't have issues.
Hold on a second, douchebags. Fucking Josh, I know your siblings. You're not telling them shit.
That's
Mike. True. Mike, I know your siblings. You're not running to them for help.
Yeah, they don't have any superpowers.
Tommy, I know you're not telling Gerard anything.
Oh, I'm not telling my brother or anything. I might tell my sister though.
Right, but even if they had superpowers, Mike.
Yeah, come on.
Oh, and my brother is smarter than I am. I would definitely bring my brother Rick in on it.
Your brother Rick? Have we ever even met Rick?
I've met Rick, haven't I, Mike?
Yeah, you've all met my brother.
First of all,
is
that Ben's dad?
Yes.
Yeah, I know Rick.
Anyway. Yeah, sure, Rick.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, Rick's anyway, a nice guy.
He's the Sheena E of my family. How do you not know Rick? He's a drummer. Oh,
as far as I'm concerned, Rick is Chuck from Happy Days. You know, he's just theoretical. He bounces the basketball twice in season one, goes up the stairs, and never comes back down.
That's because he was already moved out of the house when you started.
That's right. Rick's brother named Chuck. Look it up, Josh.
I'm not looking.
That's because he wasn't living at the house when we started hanging out. He was already off to college and being an adult.
It's not like
shit.
Sunday, Monday were happy days, or
Tuesday or Wednesday.
Wednesday, happy days.
Those were all good days. Actually.
All right, let's talk about the awesome because number five has been traveling through time. He works for a shadow quasi-government organization that is trying to keep the timeline straight. And he is only one of a number of assassins. They introduce two of the best characters, I think, ever, Hazel and Cha-Cha, my favorite villains. These guys have more of a story arc than most protagonists in movies.
And let's face it, Hazel is the only one that goes through the hero's journey.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
There is, for the show, an argument to be had that Hazel is the main character.
Yeah. I'll buy that.
Yeah.
You guys notice the blue light surrounding Hazel and his girlfriend right before the apocalypse, right? They get pulled out of the continuum. We're going to see those two again.
I'm sure.
I hope. Sure. It was such a great little love story, a little so sweet. I like Cha-Cha too.
If they were able to kill number five, it actually stops the apocalypse. Because then number seven wouldn't have been so pissed off at the family for ignoring her and everything because they wouldn't have anything to ignore her about.
Excellent point. Plus, she might not have shot the moon by accident.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, and that's all because of the siblings. Yeah. Hazel and Cha-Cha are the legit. Hazel, especially, is the legitimate hero of the story. I agree with you wholeheartedly.
All right. Good. About time.
Yeah, there's definitely, there's an argument to be had that Hazel's arc is the arc that makes the most sense to make them the most character. Especially when you're dealing with like such an ensemble cast and you're dancing around between scenes, it's sort of difficult to figure out who the story exactly is going around. A lot of people could say it's number five, right? And his journey, right? Him being the sort of the catalyst for the entire storyline and the timeline.
I think he's more of a MacGuffin.
He's that's the other side of the coin is that he's not the story. He's just the catalyst to have the story, right?
Well, it also, once again, this really depends on who you're talking to, because the LGBTQQAAII community has really taken to Klaus, the seance, as, you know, their own. And they would say the entire story is about him. And I think he gets the most screen time. I bet if you timed it out, he gets the most screen time.
Well, I think that's the case because he is sort of the family glue.
Yeah.
So he is definitely the breach between every scene, but I don't think he's the focus of every scene. So
I don't know. He's such a good actor. He kind of draws your attention in every scene.
He does kind of steal every scene he's in.
And he steals it.
I love the fact that they didn't bother to go back in time with us except for in flashbacks to when he was in Vietnam. And the fact that he chose to stay in Vietnam for love is just an amazing thing, especially for his character.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, a guy who can see the good and gets haunted by the dead, the fact that he was in the battlefields in Vietnam had to be horrific for him.
Yeah. In the comic book, by the way, there's a little thing that he might have been there on the 8th of November. Which is kind of a famous battle. They don't really talk about that in the movie, but in the comic book it is.
I mean, in his way, Klaus does kind of go through his own hero's journey as well.
Yeah, I'll give you that. He gets clean. He becomes more of a hero. He learns more about his powers. Yeah, you know what, LT? I'm going to take that insight and say you are correct. But now I got the song The 8th of November running around in my head and I might cry, so...
Who sang that? Was that Sheena E?
That was not Sheena E.
Yes, it was. That was one of her B-sides.
Huh, all right.
Believe it or not, it's a big and rich song. And it will make Mike, my fellow veteran, it will make you cry until you need electrolytes.
All righty.
Listen to it after this.
I mean, I agree that character has a – I think he's a significant character. But, yeah, I just didn't – watching the whole show, I didn't feel he was the center. That's all.
Neither did I, but I think it's one of those kind of things where an ensemble cast, people who see themselves in a character pick that character to see themselves in. Now, I obviously saw myself as the White Violin's boyfriend. A manipulative serial killer.
You know what? And even all the villains in this story, they all have their clear-cut motivation as to why they're doing each thing. And they all think they're doing it for the right reasons. They're not just a generic bad guy, right? Because even Cha-Cha and Hazel, they know that there's going to be an Armageddon and that afterwards a utopia is going to eventually spring forth from it. So they're actually trying to preserve this utopia. It's just that Hazel then realizes the fallacy of his ways in all the murder and, you know, he's going to get screwed out of his pension. And
they cut
his per diem. It's all, you know, it's really.
Thank God we got our Hudson Hawk references. Yeah. I thought we weren't going to make it this week.
But the White Violin's boyfriend, what's his name in the show? Lenny?
Harold Jenkins?
Why did you just dismiss Harold Jenkins that quickly?
Leonard.
It might be Harold
Leonard
Jenkins.
Peabody.
Leonard Peabody. Leonard Peabody.
But the actor, his name is John Magaro. And one of the things that bothered me about the role, it's so similar to his role in Orange is the New Black.
Oh, yeah.
But I almost couldn't get past that he was a different character. He's such a, like, they're both sort of like simpering kind of people who are like looking up to an unattainable person, whether or not they're behind bars or he thinks they're of, you know, some significant social stature. They were just so close for me that it threw the character like completely in the fucking garbage bin for me.
All right, fair enough.
I wanted somebody else there, or either a different actor or just something else that sort of split that for me. It was just a little too close to the bone.
Oh, NPR. Neil Patrick Harris would have been really good there. Really? Yeah. Because he can switch that
NPR's face. NPR's a radio station.
Yeah.
By the way, I think Harold Jenkins was that guy's name. This has been bothering me. I think his name was actually Harold Jenkins. He went by Leonard.
His name was Harold Jenkins.
He changed his name to Leonard.
He killed his father.
I'm just trying to stand up for LT.
He's right, but he's right.
You're right. I know you're right.
You are just how much have you had to drink? Because you've been fucking brilliant today.
Yeah, you're fantastic this afternoon. What the fuck?
Holy shit.
Yeah. It's like that migraine set your whole brain straight with a little scotch added.
You get like a reboot.
A reboot. A scotch boot.
All right, let's talk about the ending. Sorry. I hated the ending so much, I punched myself in the dick.
Why?
I like the ending of the comic.
Because I wanted to feel something besides the rage that I was feeling. Even the pain of being punched in my own dick was better than the rage I was feeling at that shitty ending.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about 20 seconds.
What?
I mean, there were plenty of MacGuffins in there. There were plenty of just nonsensical page-turning ideas to interrupt characters and interrupt story. I liked some of the apocalyptic stuff where Number Five was out there and just living in a world with it's just him and how you mentally deal with that, which I think is great. And then when you come back and you add what's that shitty movie with the guy, the actor from The Martian or from
Priscilla, Queen of the Desert?
No, he's the Bourne. He's Jason Bourne.
Matt Damon?
Matt Damon?
Yeah. So Matt Damon's got that movie with what's her name that John Krasinski's married to, and it's like the whole time travel bullshit thing where there's like the
something the Bureau.
Yeah. Like Bureau. Yes, something Bureau. What is it?
You are playing verbal charades. Yeah. What the fuck? It's that guy who was in that movie with that girl. You know what I'm talking about.
I don't even think I've seen this movie.
The Reaffirmation Bureau. Something in the Bureau. It's definitely that. Bureau.
You got that. Yeah, it's definitely fuck a Bureau in the name. So anyway, it's sort of like an out-of-time stream organization that tries to make sure that the world continues on in a certain way, right? And that's sort of what we get here, right? There's this out-of-time stream, you know, governmental faction that makes sure we can all continue. Don't tell me what it is. I know you're looking at it. I can see you fucking typing, and I don't want to see the reflection in your goddamn glasses.
Your fucking
Ringo shirt. So do not tell me. But it's something very close to that.
What does your dad do for a living?
Shut it. And that's
it's the chiropractic bureau.
Yeah, seriously, is that sort of
an adjustment
word for that?
You in the universe?
Oh, the adjustment bureau.
So anyway, yeah. So it's like that kind of feeling where there's like that outside entity that's outside of the time stream, fucking with the time stream. It's it's a little Doctor Whovian. It's a little adjustment bureau, and honestly, it's the.
It's the Royal Tenenbaums with an apocalypse is what it is.
Yeah. It definitely was feeling Royal Tenenbaums in a lot of ways from the sets to the music.
Yeah, they used vinyl. Yeah, it's definitely everything is
Bombs, by the way.
Yeah.
Royal Tenenbaums is a great movie.
And it's all about family dysfunction.
Fantastic soundtrack.
And though it was an ensemble cast and we talked about the individuals and their story arcs, the whole story itself is about a family, a dysfunctional family who, because they had such a shitty childhood, have grown apart. But what was the one thing, the whole reason for Hargraves getting all these kids together is to save the world, right? And so the whole 10 episodes is looking at a dysfunctional family who has problems with each other. And then at the end, when they can actually save the world by killing one of the siblings, the family comes together and decides to try to save their sister instead. Their sister who they've shit on all these years because she wasn't special. They're going to try to save her and because deep down inside, this family loves each other. And now, at the end, number five is able to save his family and hopefully lead about saving the entire world from the apocalypse, which is the whole reason they were brought together to begin with. This is a full circle story arc. You hate the ending, but I'm telling you, it's a perfect ending for this. The whole family has now come together, and now they have an opportunity for season two, and that's what they fucking need, because if they just solved everything, there's no goddamn season two, and I like the show, so fuck off, Tom. It was a perfect ending. Kick yourself in the balls again.
Well, it was a punch, thank you. And comparing it to a Wes Anderson movie is great, because Wes Anderson is so weird, he's his own genre. Like, it's a Wes Anderson-like movie.
Yeah.
That's how weird Wes Anderson is. And I think this actually does fit into that compartment. A lot of the scenes where, like, they're all dancing to I Think I'm Alone Now, that could have been pulled straight out of a Wes Anderson flick. And the living in the weird house and all that other stuff, out of Wes Anderson.
I mean, the guy's a billionaire, yet the house looks kind of run down on the inside.
Yeah,
well, that's because Mr. Pogo is not a very good housekeeper.
He's a shitty butler. He throws his feces around.
Yeah.
Hey, Pogo, you want to clean that up? Hey, I made you.
Although I do have to say, there was one scene with the Kraken, Diego, number two, whatever you want to call him. I know Josh doesn't want to call him the Kraken.
I don't.
That one scene with Diego where he kills his mom.
Oh, that was
very sad.
That actually literally made me cry watching it. And I know it's not real, and I know it's a robot, even in the context of just watching the goddamn show, but it felt so – oh, my God. That was actually my favorite scene because that really got me. It hooked me. I was caught in the moment, and – nothing else mattered. I only cared about how bad Diego felt and how he thought he was actually trying to save his mom by killing
her. And nothing else mattered.
Yeah. So I have to say, I don't think it's any surprise that the lead writer for the Steve Blackman here is also the lead writer for the unfortunately canceled Legion.
Oh, really?
So I think he has a particular bent towards both the super and the psychotic that really sort of puts a lot of these stories together in a way that we don't get to see very often. I think his interpretation of comics is particularly well-placed and particularly well-written, and I'm going to follow this guy.
It would have been so much funny if you said the super and the natural. All right, final thoughts. I'm looking forward to season two. I see redemption coming my way. I think I just wanted like two more episodes where they show them starting to rebuild the family. That would have done it for me.
My final thoughts, it's a great series. It's one of the few times I'm going to emphatically say this is well better than the written material. And the interpretation did a lot more for me here than it did in its original art form. Blackman is doing a great job. I hope he stays on the project, and I'm ultimately willing to follow this guy wherever he goes because his work on Legion, although it's been canceled, was brilliant, and this was fantastic. And it took something I hate, time travel, and still made it palatable, which is a pretty big thing for me personally.
And let me say one quick thing there. In Legion, I saw a lot of Wes Anderson-like things, especially in the Psycho Ward, where they're all wearing the same jumpsuits. Very reoccurring in Wes Anderson stuff. He gets it.
Tommy,
final thought?
I love this series. I thought it was great. Once again, I think the the television series was better than the comic, and I think it really does have to do with the fact that he was able to flesh stuff out a bit more than you could do in 6 22-page stories. You know, plus the cast was brilliant, so.
It was a great cast.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And the music was fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Mikey, final thoughts?
I really hope that we see more of Hazel and Cha-Cha in the next series, and I hope Bill Murray is the main antagonist.
Oh, in the Hotel Oblivion series?
No, I think the next one's going to be Dallas.
Dallas.
Probably. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's some dream casting right there. All right.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob Tech pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box, comics talk for comics fans.
Mikey.
Yeah.
I guess that brings us to the front of the long box. What do you got for me, buddy?
Uh-oh. At the front of the long box, I have Batman. We've talked about Tom King in the past. He and Mark Russell are probably the two best writers over at DC. Nothing against anybody else. But Tom King has been on a level by himself. I told you guys about the Vision series. We talked about the Mr. Miracle series before. I've already talked about the Batman series. I think it's one of the best runs, if not the best run ever, on Batman. And my favorite new series, it used to be Hush, but it's the War of Riddles and Jokes. But now, Tom King no longer gives a damn. Tom King is doing whatever the frack Tom King wants to do. The last two issues of the Batman series, I believe it's number 66 and 67, he's just having Batman dream. And these are crazy dreams. One is the Question is questioning Catwoman in an interrogation scene, which all seems to be a dream of the Batman. I'm not really sure because Tom King does it whatever he wants. And the second issue that I mentioned is just a retelling of a Looney Tunes story as seen through the eyes of the Batman. It is crazy shit. And I'm really digging it.
All right. You talked to me about that before and I was pretty excited, but now I'm super excited. Tommy, what do you got at the back of the long box?
Well, I have started reading Iron Fist Epic Collection, The Fury of Iron Fist. This is starting out with the Marvel Premieres, and I'm about 7 issues in on the Marvel Premiere stuff, and it's the origin of Iron Fist, and it is fantastic. It's the Claremont information, the Claremont stories from Iron Fist from Marvel Premiere. And so far, they've been fantastic. So I would recommend that to both you and Josh, since you're both Iron Fist fans.
Well, Josh, you're a slightly bigger Iron Fist fan than me, but that's going out on a tangent there. Tangents are your thing. What do you got for me on a tangent today, buddy?
I got a weird thing today, and it's actually kind of in line with your thing, Tom. So really, this is sort of directed to you. So a company called Broadly, which is associated with Vice, came out with a bunch of stock photos this week of trans of the LGBTQ community. So if people don't know who our listeners, stock photos are readily available to the public, and they're free to use without copyright or omission. So you can use them anywhere and in any way you want, in the internet or your website or marketing materials, printed materials, anywhere. There's just all these stock photos that came out of sort of
So like if you need someone looking thoughtfully over a brochure for your college brochure.
Sure. And they came out with a lot of them, right? So they released all this big stuff. And there was sort of a hullabaloo on social media about it, going in both directions, right? One where people were like, oh, this is great, thank you so much. And another where people were like, it's feeling like a little overtly friendly to the community, almost to the point where being patronizing. And also, it also gives people a platform to take those photos and use them in negative ways, right? Without people's permission. So I guess what do you think about that, Tom? Where are we going with this? It seems like a world where these things should happen, but it also seems like the crossroads between capitalism and controversy.
Well, two thoughts on this right off the bat. The first one is the worst spot for any group to be is invisibility. That's where you're at the most danger of being used, exploited, or attacked. So remember when African Americans weren't seen in any kind of media whatsoever? They were non-people. And that's when they were the most attacked, the most exploited, the most, you know, that's when they were in the most danger. Same with the LGBTQQAAII community. When you never see any of their images, that's when they're not people. That's when they're at their most vulnerable. When you start seeing them as, oh, that's the person who's at the ATM that time in a brochure, or they're in the background of a Spider-Man comic book. It was a big deal when African-American students were seen in a Spider-Man comic book, not as characters, not as vendors, not as janitors, but just as fellow students just walking around, because New York looked like that. That's the way New York looked. It was a big deal when we normalized that, and I see that as a normalization. The second part of that, of course, is will people grab these images and use them to make offensive memes? Yes. That's just, you know, part of the problem. And the second point I wanted to make was my wife wrote a brilliant piece years ago about what it was like being a female computer scientist called In Favor of the 250 Hitter. And she argued that real equality doesn't happen in baseball until an African-American 250 hitter makes a team. Sure, every team wants to get Jackie Robinson or the greatest African-American baseball players on their team. But when you see an average player getting the same breaks as an average white player, that's when we start moving towards equality. And this is a move towards that. Having stock footage of a trans person buying something at a bakery or getting on a bus or using a bank is part of that move.
So you think this is the distillate of coming closer to slow, shitty progress?
That's exactly it. I often say it, but slow, shitty progress is still progress, and this is slow, shitty progress. People are going to do what they're going to do. There are those out there that are going to be mean-spirited and make mean memes. And
so one of the other arguments, I guess, not specifically against the effort, but specifically against Broadly, which is owned by Vice, which is owned by HBO, which is a traditionally liberal sort of outlook. But Broadly sort of went out of their way, I think, to self-aggrandize their effort. And I think that's where a lot of the lash, sort of the lashback came from. From the LGBTQ, and there's other letters after that community.
L+.
They need a shorter acronym. Step one for me is to find the LGBTQ community, and they need to find a shorter acronym.
Actually, I kind of like L+ right off the bat.
I'm just going L+. Yeah. L+. That's what I'm rolling with.
Can I just share one thing? I think a 250 batting average is actually pretty good in the majors.
Is it? I don't really know statistically.
That's 1-4.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like a great average.
That
for
is that. Actually really good.
It might have been 200 or 150. I can't remember her paper.
It better not
But it's an average hitter being given the same. I'm not giving numbers, guys. You all know this.
Yeah, I know.
Let me talk about the double-edged sword that is, though. Do we go out of our way and try to be inclusive, or are we just inclusive? At the beginning, we have to go out of our way to be inclusive. Why? Because no one else is being inclusive.
So the league average was 257.
All right, 257. All right, so 250 isn't bad, but it's not great.
Not great. Right?
That's why she wrote the paper, fuck you, Mike, called In Favor of the 250 Hitter.
I would love to have hit 250.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
Well, yeah, that's because we suck. But we're not in the majors. You're an old Jewish guy. I'm an old fat guy.
Whoa, Mike's not Mike, old Jewish. Mike, well, I'm an old Jewish guy.
You're kind of old.
What? Just carry on.
All right.
I might have misread that.
My point is, none of us are making it to the majors.
None of us?
Yeah.
What, yeah. No, Josh, you're right. Yeah.
You got a shot, Josh? Come on.
No. Nope, none of us. Yeah, you're right.
My point is, the 250 hitter would have been average and okay.
I know. I was just fucking with your story. That's all. I don't want to argue. I understand where Laney was coming from. If it's an average black batter has the same batting average as the average white batter, does he have the same opportunities?
Yeah,
that's what you were saying. I just think 250 is not bad. Yeah.
And I just think she's not taking OBP into account, but whatever. I'm not, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, if it was on base percentage, that wouldn't be good. I think we can all.
I'm talking about other people's pussy. Because I'm down with OBP.
Yeah.
That's my last name, not OBP.
OBP.
Yeah.
Ben? Benjamin?
Anyway.
Hello.
You're both taking up our time.
Thank you.
Carry on.
I think that'll do it for us tonight, guys. Let's go over to plugs. We don't have anything set in stone yet for any upcoming gigs. We have a couple that we put in for. But we do want to thank Kirby Crackle. Kirby Crackle all the time giving us our great rock intro and outro. Also, I want to thank the guys from Pinky and the Brain. Have you guys heard what LT got for us? That was great, LT.
No, I haven't heard it.
You should listen to our podcast once in a while.
Josh, you should listen to the podcast.
It's our new intro. Pinky and the Brain intro us.
Only up to Mark Russell. Was that on the Mark Russell one?
No, it wasn't.
Okay.
One after that.
We'll listen to the next one soon.
Okay.
I wondered too many. LT, that was a great gig. Good job on you, boy. Pinky and the Brain doing our intro. That's awesome. Kevin Smith, all these guys taking their time. It was terrific.
I would like to give a plug out to GeekOrthodox.com.
GeekOrthodox.com.
Purveyor of fine t-shirts and other geeky things, such as Johnny Skywalker rocks glasses, stained glass prints, etc. and so forth.
I would like to thank our friends over at Who's Next Gaming. If you haven't checked out their podcast, let me just say they're the Sheena E. of sex robots. I don't know what that means, but you should really check out their podcast.
Well, I'll self-aggrandize for a second and say Epic Nerd Camp is coming up before July. Get in there. Con of Thrones, come take my sword class there. And beertube.com. Go to beer-tube.com and check out some of my beer reviews.
Oh, yeah. You should.
Josh, you've been slaving on that beertube. Yeah, we've already posted a bunch of those. But Josh, you're having a lot of fun with those. Tell us what the last one was about.
So what I'm trying to do is compare local craft beer versus their national equivalents, which I don't think a lot of people are doing. So I'm not comparing beer to beer. I'm comparing national volume to local craft beer. Come check it out if you're a beer fan. And if you're not, I belch and swear a lot. And if that appeals to you, get in there.
Speaking and I think your first t-shirt.
No, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, John.
No, go.
I was going to say your first t-shirt really should be I'm from bumfuck nowhere.
That's definitely true.
Yeah.
If you're on YouTube, you should also check out our channel, The Longbox Guys. We have a number of videos. The Green Lantern Villains is actually our most popular video, even more popular than Josh's Secret Origin, which is shocking.
And you guys really should record your offices for My Secret Office.
I'm gonna do that. I got the camera equipment, and I've got the video software now. I've been doing a little video editing lately, so I'm getting good.
Ooh.
Mike, just make yours sad.
It is sad.
That's what I want.
Bake is not a thing. It's
I want like a stack of comic books with like an ashtray on it.
Why are there razor blades in that ashtray that are covered in blood? Don't ask why. Yeah. I'm just not really
you don't
kidding.
Need to know what goes
called
on
product
here.
Placement.
Yeah.
LT, you can just be sitting in a dark room with a towel wrapped around your head crying softly.
Well, at least he'd be wearing a towel.
I don't know what Jay's doing with that towel.
Why won't this towel come off? And that about does it for us tonight, guys.
Yeah.
Mikey, what's this podcast like for you?
It's like Drunk History, but for comics.
And Tommy, sweet, sweet Tommy, what are you going to say, buddy?
This may not be the podcast you desire, but it's definitely the podcast you deserve.
And Josh, you've been invited down to Nashville, Tennessee to give a longsword demonstration at Con of Thrones, the official Game of Thrones con. That is super news. Is that your sector?
That's going to be my sector, but also my sector is going to be Broody Bay, where Mariner says it's the glaive for the save.
The glaive for the save. And don't forget what I always say. Don't diss what you hate. Just promote what you love. You're going to live longer and be happier. Love you guys. Talk to you all soon. Thank you for the long box, guys. And don't forget to visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/thelongboxguys, where you can hear an extra podcast every single week. This week, we review something I can't remember. Josh, do you remember what it was?
80s superhero shows.
80s superhero shows.